This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Inside Story on BFM 89.9.
Good evening. It is 6:05. Welcome to Inside Story with Lee Chui Lin and Sharmila Ganesan. Tonight, why a joke about rape is never that simple.
So first, we'll be talking about the incident that sparked it all off, a teacher making rape jokes during a conversation about sexual harassment and how we can do better in our schools.
Then we'll look at how this is part of a wider culture and how to address it within society as a whole.
And finally, we check in with a comedian about how to address this mentality of it's just a joke, where's your sense of humour?
So, tell us what you think. Have you heard people joking about things like rape and sexual assault? What can we do to address this? Call 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, and tweet us at BFM Radio. This is Inside Story. All right, it is 6:06, and before we get going, I think we all need some background as to why exactly we're talking about this evening. So it all began on Friday when a 17-year-old, Ayn Husniza, had shared online on her TikTok, actually it began, and then later on Twitter, that a male teacher had made rape jokes during a conversation about sexual harassment in a physical and health education class. And essentially, I'm not sure we necessarily want to repeat the jokes, but suffice to say they were... They weren't funny at all.
They weren't funny at all. They also, there's no gray area here. I mean, if you want to go read up what they were, you know, they are in many news articles online. But definitely not something a teacher should be joking about with his students.
And also directly undermining what the conversation was supposed to be about,
exactly.
Which was sexual harassment again.
Yeah. And what Ayn talked about was the fact that the girls all remained silent when this joke was made. Boys laughed in response. The teacher also continued to, you know, make other remarks that were very, very... not appropriate at all, not appropriate in any context, really. And what went on to happen was that Ayn basically posted screenshots on Twitter about her complaint following this to the school counselor. And even then, not much was done because the school counselor apologized on behalf of that teacher, but also told this teenager that it's quote unquote normal for teenage boys to make crude jokes and that girls are quote unquote sensitive and emotional. Counselor went on to say what else could they do except to reprimand the teacher. They needed to hear what the full story was, but didn't say anything about bringing this up to the authorities. And then also said that teachers have different ways of teaching.
Yes. So subsequent to that, so it's a story that keeps getting worse at every level, right? So first the joke was made, then a complaint was lodged, which wasn't taken seriously. And then subsequently, after all this happened, Ayn then received a rape threat from a classmate. So just to compound matters. And she has rather wonderfully and bravely said that despite all this, she wants to continue fighting this sort of mindset and calls for a reform to the education system. The police have also recorded statements from both Ayn and the teacher. So this, of course, has escalated. It has made headlines everywhere. And we have also seen people responding. So former education minister Mazli Malik, for example, said rape is not a joke and teachers should be emphasizing safety. We also have Batukawan MP Kasturi Pato calling on the current education minister, Dr. Muhammad Razi Muhammad Jidin, to step up and take firm action here, and calling on the Women, Family and Community Development Minister, Dato' Sri Rina Harun, to commit to tabling the sexual harassment bill.
So this is all coming, I think, at a time when just before this video came out, we had a week of survivors and coming out online. Again, girls, mostly from still in school, some who were recounting their experiences before about this question of period shaming and period checks and sort of the assault that occurred often in those situations. So this isn't by any means an isolated incident when it comes to students being expected to put up with things that they frankly shouldn't have to. And then let's emphasize again, the girl who brought this to light is 17. I'm so impressed that she's got the courage and the fortitude to do this, but she shouldn't have to.
And in many ways, the fact that she was threatened after bringing it up tells you everything you need to know about the culture in which we operate. So we are going to be spending the hour talking about this story and the conversations that it has sparked. Again, first up, we're going to be looking at how it is that we talk about these things in school. Because remember, this all started in a school setting, in what should theoretically be a safe space. Later on, we're going to talk about society as a whole and how this in many ways is just a part of rape culture. And finally, this idea of it was just a joke. We want to just look at that mindset a bit more closely with a comedian. So after this, we'll be speaking with Siti Aisha Hassan Hasri, who is founder of the Spot Community Project, a movement that develops comprehensive sexual education to help young people gain confidence in making informed decisions. So that is going to be coming your way very shortly. If you have thoughts, comments, anything at all you'd like to share, call us 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio.
Beyond Frivolous Matters, BFM 89.9, The Business Station.
It is 6:13 and you're listening to Inside Story with Lynn and Shamila. We're talking today about how we talk about things like sexual assault, like rape, like sexual harassment. And this is coming off of an incident in which a teacher made rape jokes during a conversation about sexual harassment, in which the girls were silent and uncomfortable and the boys laughed. One of the students then went on to report and reveal this, and then she was met with rape threats. So clearly there is a need to address this within our schools, and that's what we're focusing on right now. We also want to know, have you heard people joking about things like rape and sexual assault? What can we do to address this? You can call us 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio. Joining us now, Siti Aisha Hassan Hasri, founder of the Spot Community Project. They're a movement that actually develops comprehensive sexual education to help young people gain confidence in making informed decisions for their well-being. Aisha, thank you so much for joining us.
Hi, thank you so much for having me, Lynn and Shamila.
Can you start off by telling us a little bit more about what Spot Community is doing?
Right. So prior to the pandemic, we engage young people in comprehensive sexuality education by going into schools and talking and workshopping in brave spaces with 9 to 12-year-old girls. Since the pandemic, we've shifted online and we are in the middle of raising funds to help support our online rollout in quarter three and quarter four for 13 and 14-year-old children, both boys and girls.
So what should teaching and learning about sexual harassment and sexual abuse entail?
First and foremost, I believe we need to recognize that this topics will be of a lifelong conversation, and it starts with simple concepts and it builds over time as and when the learner's capacity to understand increases. So I should say, what it should entail should be covering definition, you know, how to identify what it is, how does it look like, how does it feel like, how does it sound like. And we talk about boundaries and consent. And then we talk about what to do if you or someone you know is experiencing harassment and or abuse. And then we talk about what can you do? We empower them as an individual for yourself or for your communities or for the nation under the topics of sexual harassment and abuse.
And in these sorts of conversations, how important is the type of language that is used?
Extremely. Should I say that again? Extremely important. You know, I remember growing up, adults used to make comments towards polite children. They say, oh, bagusnya, so rajin. Parents, dia mesti ajar very, very good, you know, like saying thank yous and please and everything else. So with polite children, we can see how it affects them and motivates them to become better after that, right? So they feel very motivated. We can always find facts on how language affects children's development and ability to communicate their needs, especially readily available on researchers online. Let's take, for example, I'll give an analogy, introducing spiders and snakes to children, for example, right? if you scare them into touching them when they are already nervous, the animal also become nervous. And then it becomes a very bad experience for both parties, the spiders and the snakes, as well as the children. But some people choose to make jokes out of it and making fun of people while they're going through those traumatic experiences. But so if you were to introduce to them, like how Bindi Irwin and her family, Steve Irwin's child, who recently had a baby, their style, in introducing spiders and snakes to children in a safe space, in a brave space, from a place of love, kindness, and understanding. And that would shape a different experience altogether and empower them to always believe in positive action and speak of it again from a place of love, kindness, and understanding and compassion.
Now, these conversations about sexual harassment and abuse, when it comes to having them in school, what would you say is the age that they should start at?
As young as 7, you should start during the school orientation. You have a whole week of speaking with the children, right, when they get into school. Kids at the age of 7 are brilliant advocates. They're amazing. You tell them, smoking is bad. They will tell everyone that they meet smoking is bad, and they will hold on to that and make sure that their environment is safe. So start as soon as possible, as young as 7. Again, if I can remind you, it should start with simple concepts and build over time as their capacity to understand increases. So start as soon as possible and increase the complexity of that topic over time.
So one of the things that has been brought up, especially to do with this teacher, is that, boys and girls react or receive things differently. And that's why in some instances, something like a crude joke, for example, is something we should, quote-unquote, expect from teenage boys. I wanted to know, how would you engage both boys and girls on this issue? Tell us more.
Oh, this is a very hard question. We've been working on this really, really hard. That was why initially when we started SPOT, we started with girls, because I used to be a girl, now I'm a woman, and we understand how girls are, and we understand how girls think and how girls work. We have that gender-specific experience, from different age groups. But I've already started working. We have, as a team, have already started working with boys. And we believe that it is important to engage both boys and girls so that we can address the problem as a whole and inspire positive action and enable peer empowerment so that they can stand up for each other instead of, standing up for the person who did wrong. So how I begin with creating the awareness on how the world looks and how it feels, how it's different from one person to another, depending on their parental attitude, their upbringing, their gender roles, their social economic status, and their social influences and their choices of friends, and then engage them on their own experiences as a person. How do they feel within their families? How do they feel at school? How do they feel within their environment? What do they see? And it needs to be gender specific. I really, really believe this. And then it comes together as a cohesive, everyone will be able to understand how the other side sees their own different perspective, right? We also engage with them with whatever they've seen in the news, because boys see news as something different and girls see news as something different. So as long as we have an open and mindful conversation in order to establish understanding, we will be doing a good job at reinforcing, hopefully, good values, a sense of morality, and a sense of respect for others as well as for the law, and how it is our duty to uphold honors of ourselves and our friends and the law, because it's there to keep us all safe. I hope I'm making sense.
No, that makes sense. But I did want to draw on the fact that we are talking about differing levels of comfort when it comes to both the adults and the children. We're talking about different cultural contexts. How do we factor in these things when having these discussions?
I would say we've been having this conversation for a very, very long time. As far as I can remember, as a matter of fact, I'm already in my 30s. And it's just that, you know, every time this comes to light, it trends and then it fizzles out. So I hope that this time around, because of the pandemic, everyone's just forced to think about a solution together and fight for what they feel is right. So fight for what is right instead of finding an easy way out, right? But to answer your question, I would say it's something that we, not just Spot, but everyone is learning as we go. We are constantly, Spot as an organization, we are constantly learning from the best practices that is shared from program directors across the globe. One thing for sure is that we do our best to connect on a human level, right? We all feel things. We all see things and we all hear things. So we engage there from a place of love, kindness and generosity in order to create acceptance and understanding. Rest assured, our programs are rights and evidence-based, also developmentally appropriate. It's based on the International Technical Guidance of Sexuality Education that was prepared by United Nations agencies, UNESCO, UNFPA, and UNICEF in 2018. That's the latest module. And we are proud to say that we are optimistic, and we are also very optimistic, in what's happening in the nation and the empowerment, the mobility that the youth has nowadays. It's just very different 5 years ago. And we're all constantly learning, as I said. And I think because we are all supporting our youth, we know that we are not and will not be afraid to admit when we are wrong, and we don't mind apologizing and we don't mind doing better. That's how I feel.
I wanted to talk also a little bit about what's currently happening within our education setup, because, of course, schools are a huge place of conversation, of education, of course, and of, I think, in many ways are a ground zero, right, for these sorts of conversations. So are teachers actually trained to conduct sexuality education? And I suppose, what could we be doing in terms of training for teachers?
In Malaysia, no. Spot is part of the technical working group of comprehensive sexuality education in Malaysia. We are working together. There's the ministries, the three ministries, representatives from Ministry of Education, Ministry of Health, and Ministry of Women and Community Development. And there's also representatives from United Nations agencies, relevant United Nations agencies. We also have representatives from NGOs and CSOs. So one of the things that we're working towards is to create a program for teachers to be trained in order to deliver a comprehensive sexuality education. So it's still in the works. But I would say what needs to go into the training for teachers first and foremost is definitely the removal of their bias and judgment. They need to acknowledge the fact that they shouldn't impose their experiences on the topic, on the subject that they're speaking about, onto the children, because they need to be aware of the fact that they need to let the children have their own experiences and make sure that they have the right knowledge, make sure that they have the right attitude or approach towards these topics. And they know exactly where to get help from, you know. So that's what these teachers need to understand. Also to reset their language and teach them how to speak about these sensitive topics from a place of love, kindness and generosity, and understand to create a better understanding instead of, you know, from a place of hate and fear and shame and stigma and all this taboo, because we already have enough of it from news, from Twitter, and all this the bad history of sex in Malaysia, actually.
And do schools have clear policies on how incidences of sexual harassment or sexual abuse is, how these situations are handled?
That's a fantastic question. To be honest, I do not have the answer for it. But if I may offer from the experiences that I've had with working with about 100 schools, when incidents are reported, it's actually very similar to the Twitter feed, whereby, you know, the girl actually confided in the counselor and then so on and so forth. So when incidents are as such were reported, especially with schools in the lower socioeconomic communities, which we've been working with, I often find that teachers who took the initiative to stand up for their students get shot down and they get bullied into submission. And they will experience a lot of stress and anxiety around this incidents, right? Because they know inherently it's wrong, but there's no support from, you know, say, for example, the principals. I've seen teachers, head principals, regardless if the principal is a man or a woman, telling them to, oh, Biala, it's okay. We take care of him. We make sure he doesn't touch another girl because he's going to retire soon. Kasihan dia, just 6 more months. We just keep quiet on me. Just 6 more months. You don't look at him. We make sure that he doesn't cross paths with that girl anymore. And this is in a primary school, public school, not even boarding school. And I've seen teachers who've had to stick with troublesome teachers who were transferred from other schools. And then they realize that this, the history of the transfers from different schools, one school to another, and they had to stick with these troublesome teachers. Who some are actually predators, and now in current terms, sexual offenders, I would say, or moral police, yes, before they can actually get them to make a request for another transfer, to transfer out from their schools. And sometimes these troublesome teachers can stay in the system or within that school itself for six months to 2 years, which gives a lot of stress and a lot of issues around the school. So from my experience, it seems that predators have been using the system that was created to keep students safe or schools safe to their advantage.
Hmm. There's so much work left to be done. Aisha, thank you so much for speaking with us today.
Thank you so much for having me, Lynn and Shamila.
That was Siti Aisha Hassan Hasri, founder of Spot Community Project, which again is a movement that develops comprehensive sexual education to help young people make informed decisions. So we were speaking with Aisha, particularly because of, I think, just rape jokes being made in the context of a school setting by a teacher who was supposed to be giving a talk about sexual harassment. That's what we're discussing today. We want to know what your thoughts are. Call us 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio. Keep it here on Inside Story, BFM 89.9.
Build Fairer Malaysia, BFM 89.9.
It is 6:38 and you're listening to Inside Story with Lynn and Sharmila. The story that we're talking about today is essentially why rape jokes are never just that simple, right? And this is coming off of an incident in a school in which a male teacher who was supposed to be conducting a discussion on sexual harassment essentially made jokes about rape and sexual assault. And when a student, Ayn Husniza, raised the issue online, raised a complaint, it actually resulted in a rape threat from a classmate. So clearly there are larger issues to be had here about the ways in which we discuss things like rape, like sexual assault, like harassment. And We've been asking you for your thoughts, whether or not you've heard jokes like this, how they make you feel, how you think we should handle it. You can call us 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio. Earlier on, we heard from Siti Aisha Hassan Hasri, founder of Spot Community Project, about how we could be doing better in schools. We are shortly about to be hearing from Janelle Tan, Information and Communications Officer at AWAM, about how we can be doing better in society, because this is a larger issue. But first, some messages that have come our way.
So we have May, who says, we normalize rape culture by blaming the way women dress and by defending boys and men who make rape jokes as it being, quote unquote, just a joke. And I think that really covers what's happened here, right? Because even when Ayn went to her school counselor, that was the response she got.
Yeah, I think boys will be boys and girls will be girls, in general, are not wise statements or helpful statements to be made, mostly because both generalizations are bad. So this idea that boys are inherently crude and silly and that they need to diffuse situations by making jokes about rape, or that girls are sensitive and emotional and can't handle it, neither of those characterizations, which is usually encompassed within boys will be boys, girls will be girls, is helpful or appropriate for a school to make, mostly because it doesn't take into account the fact that I could also say people are people, and that, you know, in every instance, people are different. They process things differently. And so that's just not helpful. We also have, just before we get to Janelle, this from Rosalind.
Rosalind says, I'm just aghast that people with such mentalities are teachers. It's really time for a revamp of the entire education ministry. It's bad enough that our academic standards, which were respected and were to be emulated in the 70s, is going down the drain. Well done, and thank you, Ayn. I'm sad that we need more brave Ayns to put the teaching profession, to keep the teaching profession on their toes, especially in more remote and rural settings.
Yeah, I think that we've been hearing that Ayn and her father have both gone on to make reports and the like, and she has said very firmly that she plans to keep talking about it, that she wants to continue championing this cause. And I just think it's unfortunate, right, that we need to put people in this position in the first place. Whereas if we just had better training, if we just had a healthier way of approaching this conversation, perhaps it would be less necessary. And that is where our next guest comes in. If you'd like to share your thoughts, call us 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio. Joining us over Zoom now to talk about how this is a societal problem, not just schools, is Janelle Tan, Information and Communications Officer at AWAM, that is the All Women's Action Society. Janelle, thanks for speaking with us.
Thank you very much for having me. Lynn and Shamana, just to say that I've been a big fan of your, I've been a big fan of you both. So it's an honor for me to be on BFM 89.9 today.
That's very kind of you
Thank
to say,
you.
Janelle. Thank you. Just to focus on what we're talking about, like in this instance, right, these kinds of jokes that the teacher made, and you, again, if you're not familiar with the story yet, you can read it's in articles and the like. So these jokes also come up in spaces beyond schools. They're in meeting rooms, dinner tables, online platforms. What is the impact of having these sorts of jokes about or statements that end up downplaying sexual violence?
Okay, so on the surface, I would say it does two things. The first thing is that it normalizes rape to be an acceptable behavior. So that's the first one. And two, at the same time, it basically focuses public attention on unfounded characteristics that lead to rape, thus detracting from the fact that rape is basically a gross act and violation that demeans or commodifies a person by way of forced sexual intercourse without a person's consent. So these two basically perpetuate what we call to be rape culture.
Now, you mentioned rape culture. Could you explain what that is? Because that's really at the heart of this, isn't it?
Yes, it is. Just to give a one-liner about where when rape culture occurred. But it was first coined in the 1970s, and basically this concept refers to an environment in which rape is prevalent and at the same time is also normalized and even it's used. So rape culture can be perpetrated through the use of misogynistic language, concurrently with the objectification of women's bodies and also the glamorization of sexual violence. And these three areas can manifest through gender roles and rape myths. So for example, right, the traditional gender role that frames men as sexually aggressive and unable to control their sexual desires, or even justifications that men find the experience to be enjoyable, actually involves glamorization of sexual violence and equating it to enjoyment. Just to provide another example as well, the rape myth whereby only those survivors who are promiscuous are raped basically also entails the second point I've mentioned earlier, which was objectification of women, because basically the underlying assumption is that exposure to women's bodies turn the perpetrators on, which of course involves the sexualization of women. In addition to this, like aside from what I've mentioned earlier with regards to the three components, of course, a crucial part of rape culture, which we cannot ignore, would be victim blaming, whereby survivors of rape are scrutinized on the basis of characteristics like location, clothing, manner of interaction with the perpetrator, status of intoxication, and etc. So in that sense, with victim blaming, the responsibility of rape is placed entirely on the survivor and which by right should have been on the perpetrator. Yeah.
So do you think that this is a systemic issue here in Malaysia?
Yes, this is definitely a big problem because I'm sure a lot of people will be aware, like this is not the first thing that something similar has happened. So for example, right, in January 2021, there's this top executive from Honda Malaysia who received extensive public backlash for, you know, like having a very long HR letter format, like, you know, that sort of equated rape, you know, to getting AIDS and herpes. And of course, Honda Malaysia had to step up and conduct an internal investigation on the matter and to issue a public apology. Just to supplement this with another example, like, for example, last year with the case involving the Baling MRSM lecturer who posted a video online about that perpetuates rape myths, basically, such as, you know, like one dresses promiscuously, hence inviting rape, as well as, you know, victim blaming. So of course, he also got public criticism. So as you can see, you know, seeing professors and also even, you know, in executives, as you can see, this sort of mentality is a systemic issue.
And I don't even know where to start with this question, but I'm going to ask you, what are the things that need to be done to address these issues?
I would say, because I would say that a multi-sectoral effort is very much needed to reshape the narrative, because as you can see, this rape culture is very systemic. And so I would say one of the bigger sources of narratives in which, you know, which should be addressed would be the media. So for example, I mean, of course, it is important for viewers to be very critical about what messages they receive about men, women, relationships and violence from the media. But at the same time, I do think that the media also has to step up in terms of not only being aware of its role in perpetrating or even challenging discourses that support gender inequality and violence, but also capitalizing on that role to educate the public on, you know, like those problematic discourses. So for example, I mean, just going to dramas, because that relates to a lot of people. In many Korean dramas, for instance, like male characters are portrayed, you know, to pin women to the side of the wall and initiate, you know, like physical intimacy, like kissing. And this is often, more often than not, being framed as desirable or even romantic. And, you know, with classic reactions from female characters, you know, like being about being shocked and basically enjoying the whole thing, with consent not at all being the picture. So although of course this is not rape, but this is a form of sexual harassment, and as we all know, rape is part of sexual harassment. It's just that rape is on the more extreme or severe end. So through this example, something as you know, like typical or that's common, it does show that the media does play a very significant role in either further entrenching or challenging existing narratives when it comes to how women should behave, how men should behave, how relationships should be like. Is there consent or should there not be consent? So that's one important area. Of course, with all the recent issues with the recent breakout of the whole phenomenon of sexual harassment, abuse, harassment, bullying in schools, including period spot checks, not to mention, of course, with Ayn's video. There is the importance as well of improving the culture when it comes to gender socialization in very important spaces, especially schools and in the home, because childhood and adolescence are two very important stages in which most people learn and internalize gender roles. As a result, parents and teachers are very important figures in shaping basically a generation's or generations' values when it comes to interpersonal relationships and gender equality and consent. So in that sense, the onus is also on the parents and the teachers as well to educate themselves on what constitutes gender equality supportive and unsupportive language and behaviors and values, and at the same time to educate these children on them as well. So, yes.
Janelle, thank you so much for speaking with us today.
Thank you.
That was Janelle Dunn, Information and Communications Officer at AWAM, that is the All Women's Action Society, essentially talking about how this issue that we're talking about rape culture, about making light of rape, about making light, therefore, of things like sexual harassment, of rape, of sexual assault, how this is a societal issue. It goes beyond schools. And so we want to know what you think. This is something we're discussing because a teacher made rape jokes while he was supposed to be conducting a discussion on sexual harassment in schools. And after a student, Ayn, revealed that, reported that, she was then threatened by rape by a classmate. So it's a huge issue. We want to know what you think. Call us 7733-2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio. After this, we want to talk about that mentality of, oh, it's just a joke, lighten up. And for that, we'll be joined by comedian Joanne Kam. Keep it here on Inside Story, BFM 89.9.
Bigotry Free Malaysia, BFM 89.9.
It's just about 6:52, and this is Inside Story with Lynn and Sharmila. The story that we're talking about today is a teacher making rape jokes while he was supposed to be conducting a discussion on sexual harassment. His students subsequently reported that. It is a story that has made headlines, and she has also gone on to receive rape threats. And so we've spoken about how we could be doing better in schools with our teachers and training and the like. We also spoke about how as a society we need to address this and rape culture. And now we want to talk about one element that I think has come up in response to this, which is it was just a joke. You know, he shouldn't be losing his job. It doesn't need to be such a big deal. It was just a joke. And in order to address that mindset, we're crossing over now to comedian Joanne Kam Po Po. Joanne, thank you so much for speaking with us on this.
Oh, thank you for getting me voice out my opinions on this as well.
So you're known for your raunchy style of comedy. I thought we could start by you explaining the nuance between a joke that is about sex versus a joke that is about something like sexual assault.
Well, here's the thing. I read the article, and of course, number one, he's a teacher. He's not a comedian. So he shouldn't be making any jokes at all. One. Two, there is a fine line and a difference about making jokes about sex and making jokes about sexual harassment or rape. You know, I've been doing comedy for 30 years of my life. All my comedy shows are very sexual-based. They talk about sex. I talk about sex. I make jokes about it. But I never, ever make a joke about rape or harassment.
Joanne, I also wanted to extend that conversation a little bit into the difference between making a joke because you are making a joke on stage versus the how it changes when you're talking about in daily conversation.
Correct. Well, the thing is, even if you're talking with a bunch of friends over at the Mama, you are talking among friends, right? You are joking among friends. That's jokes. But this, as a teacher, joking to students, he has not only a social responsibility towards them, but also, you know, I read what was the joke. It's not a joke. It's not funny. You know, that's the thing. You know, And yes, there are some people that may say that, oh, why are you taking it so seriously? It was just a joke, blah, 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 and all that. But I also feel that you have kind of like your responsibility as well when you tell jokes like this to students who in themselves at this age, at that age right now, would be able to tell whether that joke is going to do harm or not.
So I want to talk a bit about that mindset, right? Because calling out someone who makes jokes about things like consent, like sexual assault, they can be difficult for people. And especially because of what you just said, which is the, just take a joke. What is the big deal? Or you don't have a sense of humor. How can, what are your suggestions on dealing with situations like this or responding to it?
Well, here's the thing. That joke wasn't funny to begin with, all right? And also, it tells, like, he jokes to his students and he went on to say, hey, if you want to rape anyone, please make sure that they are above 21. That is not a joke. That's just, like, you know? For me, like, I would, even as a professional, I wouldn't make that kind of jokes on stage. You get what I mean? It's very badly done. It's poor taste. And also, like, all my shows have 18 and above. In fact, all stand-up comedians show that if you go down to Crack House or you go down to Joke Factory, we always say it's for 18 and above. And the reason why we say that is, as an adult, you'll be able to register it that this is a joke, it's something to be laughed about, and not, you know, at the back of your mind, have the afterthought that say, hey, you know, this could be okay. And that is the difference.
Joanne, thank you so much for speaking with us this evening.
All right.
That was comedian Joanne Kampopo weighing in on this mindset, really, of how things are just a joke, or you should lighten up, and how that's not acceptable when you are talking about something like rape, like sexual harassment, like sexual assault. So we've been asking you for your thoughts, and we have some messages.
So we have this from Li Ling, who talks about the importance of the kind of language we use, right? And they refer to this, I think it was coverage of the issue of the period shaming and the period spot checks, and says, you know, there's a systematic problem when the Penang Mufti uses the word embarrassing girls instead of the words sexual assault with reference to the incident that he was being interviewed on. Also, can we just stick to using biological terms when it comes to referring to genitals, instead of assigning social context such as self-dignity to them?
Li Ling, you know, this is exactly what we're talking about, right? Which is the issue of language and how we use language and how it's important to be careful in the words that we use. And I think this example is an excellent one, particularly because when we talk about these things in the context of it being reported on, disseminated. These are words that then get repeated, read over and over again. And you're right. I think in any instance, using the correct language is important. When you're a public figure, more so.
We also have OSK, who says, 2 points. This isn't about sexual education. It's basic morals to not make light of rape. And two, you should bring on men to talk about how deplorable these men are who make these jokes. Men need to speak out against this, not tolerate this. I completely agree, OSK. I think that more men should talk about why this isn't acceptable, particularly in social situations when jokes like these are being made, because that's something I think doesn't happen enough.
Yep, I also think, and I entirely agree that it is about basic morals. It mm-hmm. isn't primarily about sexual education, but I think part of the reason why we wanted to talk about sexual education is because it goes on to reinforce, if morals are not something that are being reinforced at home, then you are going to need other societal reinforcements to kind of kick the mindset out, right? And I think sometimes the defense of this is something that can be addressed at home, this is something that should be taken care of at home, it's simply not enough, or it does not appear to be at this moment in time. Keep those thoughts coming. We do have to head to the news, but we'll be back for your messages. You can call us 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio. You've been listening to Inside Story, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.